Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello everyone everywhere, this is Pastor Robert Thibodeau, and I want to welcome you to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast. You know, in today's society, we are living longer today than ever before, if you exclude biblical times before the days of Abraham. One of the main reasons for us being able to live longer is due to the advances in medical technology. And I remember my grandmother was the first person in the state of Michigan to undergo open-heart surgery, where today it's commonplace in just about every hospital around the country. And that's just one example. But part of the drawback from being able to live longer is the quality of life we may experience. And when our loved ones are living longer, but they are unable to care for themselves adequately, it'll often fall to us to take care of them or hire people to take care of them. But how we adequately take care of them and still live our own life, that's the problem. Today's guest is going to share her journey on this topic. Elizabeth Adams is a practical theologian and a professional caregiver to caregivers. She's the author of the book, Living with Mama, A Good Person's Guide to Caring for Aging Parents, Adult Children, and Ourselves. Elizabeth helps you to explore the intersection of healing stories, sacred texts, and social research to direct people towards a more peaceful life, even while living in the chaos of caring for our aging parents. In addition to taking care of our aging parents, though, there's also the need to form adult relationships sometimes with grown children. Elizabeth helps us to ponder some of the reasons our present society does not look favorably on the extended family that lives together. She helps us to understand this through her book and how she's created a living concept as a way to push back, I guess you could say, against the many preconceptions of what a good life can look like in today's society. She shares how to give a voice to the spiritual gifts that grow as a result of living in a multi-generational home or even when caring for our aging parents. She helps us to realize that we are not alone in our quest to be not only good children, but good parents to our loved ones. Folks, help me welcome to the program, Elizabeth Adams. Elizabeth, oh, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Good morning, Pastor Bob. This is an honor. You are so full of energy in the spirit. I really appreciate this time.
Oh, I appreciate that. And, let me just start with this. This is the first question I always ask every person that comes on. Other than that brief bio I just read, tell us in your own words, who is Elizabeth Adams?
Who is Elizabeth Adams? What a brilliant question. Takes me right off my own game. I am the person that usually asks people questions. So to hear that one of me is it gets me started and revving. But basically, I am a wife of 37 years. Amen. I'm a grandmother of the three most amazing children ever born on the face of the earth. A mother of three grown daughters who are amazingly contributing to this society, a sister, a best friend. I'm all of those things put together. And in the meantime, I just enjoy time alone with God.
Amen. Amen. Now, quick background. You know, we mentioned this before we started the recording. I grew up in a multi-generational family, as you call them. I was raised by my grandparents, and when I was a teenager, they brought into the house my great-grandmother, who was beginning to suffer from dementia. And I mentioned that I actually seen my grandfather age about 10 years in the 3 years or so that they had her in the house. Ultimately, they couldn't care for her anymore, and they had to place her in a nursing home. She lived there for about 18 months before passing. So some of the issues that you're talking about, I'm very familiar with, you know, having experienced some of those issues. I wasn't the caregiver, but I was a witness to the things that were going on. So let me ask you this. What made you decide to write this book?
Well, I had a second career hit me, and I heard the call to go to seminary. So I went back to seminary and got my degree in theology. I had hit a crossroads in my faith, and I was really struggling with what does a practical 21st century application to God? It had become stale to me after years and years. So I while I was in seminary, I learned that I wasn't called to be a pastor from the pulpit, even though I enjoyed that experience. I kept hearing all of these voices saying, how are you going to be able to do this when your mother is passing from cancer, your children are growing up and moving back home because they're in college and it's so expensive? And how do I just wake up in the morning, drink a cup of coffee, and have some time in scriptures? Oh, that's what I need to be doing. And then as I'm doing this more and more, I'm meeting more and more people that are in the same life situation that I was, or still am, and probably will be. And the more we ended up befriending each other and talking, the more that I realized there's just so much of this that's in the world that this is my calling. I need to write this book. I need to start this community. I need to give people a hope that there are more people just like them that are actually enjoying this almost stressful, problematic, I didn't make this happen kind of lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Now, first, congratulations on the call, and I can relate 100%. When I graduated from my Bible school, when you go to these Bible schools, it's always like, oh, I have to, to be successful, you got to have a church. And, right. So we opened a church. I graduated in 1999. And from 92, well, I was called into the ministry in 95 till 2001. I was the assistant pastor at, I think, three different churches. In 2001, I opened my own church and realized within about a year or so, that was not my calling. there's a lot of headaches that go into that. That was not me. But I've found my niche now. This is what I do. But anyway, were you forced into that situation of having to deal with, taking care of aged parents and things like that, or that just something that you evolved to and ended up, doing to help other people?
Well, I was already doing it. I think one of the biggest problems with being a caregiver is that you're so caring that you see these holes, for lack of a better word, that are happening. So who is... I mean, she needs, okay, it'll be me. You just jump in and say yes to these, whether they're asked for needs or not, because you see them as a caring individual. And my own personal schedule, I'm thinking, wait, I'm in grad school. Wait, I've got a ministry. Wait. Okay. No, my mother always came first because she was suffering, which meant there were some days that I'd climb in bed and forget I hadn't even taken a shower yet. Because you still have to go to school or to work or to make three meals a day for children. So there's just, it's a natural inclination for people that are caregivers to just step into these holes.
Yeah. Amen. Now, you mentioned counting the cost of entering this type of care for your family member. Explain what it is we need to be considering if we're being faced with this possibility.
Well, I'm going to get real, real quick.
Okay.
If you're counting the cost, that means that you're actually taking the time to think about all the yeses you're saying yes to. Because you don't even think. My husband and I are both caregivers. He's a wonderful man. And so we were saying yes to the very next need any of our loved ones had. And I had to step back and realize, I'm being kind of selfish here. I'm not letting anyone else do these things. I'm so busy saying yes to the next thing that sometimes, let's say our adult children, for example, should be doing those things for themselves. And we're not allowing them to grow up because we're so comfortable being the parent who's in charge, right? So we have to step back and say, okay, what can my child do as me just being their coach because they're adults?
Wow. Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah, I know, my wife and I've got two grown daughters with their family. I got seven grandchildren now. And, we still enjoy doing things for the grandkids. But sometimes I have to tell my wife, stop. just stop. Let them do it for a change. Yeah, I understand completely what you say.
If you're counting the cost, that means you're sitting there and thinking, okay, what is this in this list of to-dos that I need to do for them? Because really what I'm doing is I'm filling my own need instead of theirs.
Yeah, amen. Now, why does society look down basically, on those who decide that, you know, taking care of their loved ones is the best option, you know, and to live as a multi-generational family unit. Why does society look down on that?
Well, I have a couple of theories on that, but I'm going to focus right now on the one that if you see anything about a family on TV, the thought of an adult child living with you means it's one of those kind of underdeveloped, creepy guys that lives in your basement, right?
Yeah.
And that's not what it's about in the real world. So we see all these stereotypes in our media, and we see people making fun of men or women that still live with their families. And it's as though they're the butt end of a joke. And these people are really strong people today that are there because usually of the millions that I've studied are there because they can't afford to go to college and live on their own. They can't afford to pay off their debts because they made mistakes and they've had to declare bankruptcy. So these are people that are getting on with their lives, not the stagnated person that's hiding in the basement. These are really strong people, and we forget to say that.
Yeah, amen. And I see that a lot, especially in today's society, where it's just, you know, I mean, if you have someone who's going to school and trying to work a job in addition to the school hours and the study time and all that stuff, usually it's not going to be a career type of job where, you know, you're making $60,000, $70,000 a year. It's going to be one of them part-time, temporary, you know, stocking shelves or being a cashier. I mean, you know, I have two grandkids in college right now, and, you know, they're not making, you know, $25,000, $30,000 a year. And so they still live at home.
Right.
You know, and that, you know, they want to be old. They don't like abiding, I guess you could say, by the family rules of, you know, they get more leeway, I guess you could say, than, you know, someone in high school. But at the same time, it's mom and dad's house, mom and dad's rules.
That's true, too. And you also have to look at a lot of the people that are graduating from college. They are graduating with these huge debts.
Oh, yeah.
So then they have to find a job, and they have huge debt. So how do you do both? Finding the job in and of itself is stressful enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the whoever you've taken your loans out with calling you and emailing you and texting you, and you're saying, I don't even have a job yet.
Yep.
So a lot of these people are living with family members to help with not only the emotional but the financial support that comes with having graduated and not having a job yet.
Yeah. Amen. What's the difference between a caregiver and a caretaker?
Oh, I love that question. Okay, so a caretaker is, by definition, somebody who takes care of property or people, and usually they're paid. They're nurses, they're doctors, they're gardeners. It's their job.
Mm-hmm.
But a caregiver is somebody that puts in, nationally speaking, studies are saying between 40 and 60 hours a week with no pay for the loved ones that are in their lives. If it's your aging parent, you're taking care of medications and doctor visits, and do they have food in the refrigerator if they're not living with you? And then you have those that are caregiving for their aging their adult children. So you are still making three meals a day for more than just yourself, and you're making sure that there are meals on the table instead of just standing up at the counter and eating leftovers. So there's this huge amount of caregiving that happens with no pay on top of your having a job and or going to school. And the caregiver part of you is also the part of you that can hear the truths that come from being a child of God. So in Ephesians 5, we know that you get more love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, goodness, self-control. That is the payment, because you're growing and growing and growing in that because you're just giving.
Amen. And we've been talking about taking care of our parents who, you know, maybe suffering physical problems or dementia and things like that. What about special needs children? I mean, it starts off, you know, where you're taking care of the baby and you know something is wrong, but those babies grow up.
Right.
And it may be a situation, and I know several people that, you know, right off the top of my head, probably I would take two hands to count them all that I know personally, that are taking care of adult children who are adult physically but not mentally. How does your book help the caregivers doing that?
Well, I'm going to say that I understand on a universal level about that. A lot of people would say to me and to different people that caregive adult children with, whether it's a handicap or a mental illness or all of the ways that we can parent children of special needs. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, oh, that child is so lucky to have you. And we usually say, no, that child has given me so much. I'm lucky to have that child.
Yeah.
Because it feels weird that somebody would say, oh, aren't they lucky to have you? Because no, that's not what I feel at all.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great example of the gifts that are in ever-increasing measure as you are a caregiver. You don't feel like what you're doing is that big of a deal. You feel like that person is giving so much to me by allowing me to give to them.
Mm. Amen. When you are involved in this type of situation, obviously the stress of everything is going to take its toll. When should you bring in outside help, you know, like nurses or, mm-hmm. you know, someone to just come in and take care of that portion that you aren't really either trained to do or comfortable doing? Or sometimes you just need a break. When's the right time to bring in the professionals, I guess you could say?
I'm going to say immediately, but that's a broad stroke. And what I mean by that is no one has the ability to take care of all of the needs of anyone. There are many needs. So I'm not saying you pay somebody because not everybody has those means. But what you do is you learn through reading a lot of the things that are a lot of the examples I put in Living with Mama. You learn how to get those resources provided by the government. Some of them are provided in your community and you don't even know about them yet because you've never needed them. So I give you a lot of references and resources to help you find your needs. For example, I mean, I'm real practical in everything I do. One of the things that I found, because I've spent hundreds of hours interviewing people that are doing these lifestyles, and I'm calling it multi-generational lifestyles. Uh-huh. Some people are living with all of the people in one home, and some of them are just supporting their aging parent or even their adult child with special needs in another facility. And what happens is, let's say you need to assist them getting up and you don't quite know how to help them get up. So you just do the best you can and you end up hurting them by accident. Mm-hmm. And then you feel horrible and they feel horrible. You're both in pain, right? There are resources to teach you how to lift someone that you never knew were there. So, you know, look through the different books and look through the different government agencies for the practicals that go with being a caregiver so you can take care of yourself and the person you're caring for.
Amen. What about siblings? You know, should our parents be, I guess, lack of a better term, passed around? I mean, you know, surely you need to take breaks from the extreme pressure of taking care of the ever-increasing demands of our loved ones. What about, you know, okay, you know, sister, it's your turn this month, or, you know, next 2 weeks you're at, you know, the brother's house, or how does that not only affect you and them, but what about the parents? How does all that affect everyone involved?
I love that you're opening this up to family, because that's very true. We've talked about paid caregivers and non-paid caregivers, but the family is a collective unit. So, for example, one of the couples that I highlight in the book discusses how to sit down as a family on a regular basis and divvy out the needs and see that they're always going to be changing. How your parent is this month will be different from how your parent is 6 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
especially if you're dealing with things that like Alzheimer's or dementia or some of the slower, sometimes progressing aging situations, and sometimes they're rapid. And so how do you work with all of your siblings and do this? That's very intricate. And, you know, you're coming into this with your childhood memories, right? This is my role because I'm the oldest, and this is your role because you're the funny one, right? Mm-hmm. And now you've got to learn how to communicate like adults who are taking care of people that gave you life. That's a different situation, totally different mindset. So you can learn to pay attention to that, again, as you're counting the costs on how to care for this person today, 6 months from now, 2 years from now. And for me, it was 15 years as my mother walked her journey through life. Wow. And she survived cancer like nobody else that I knew. She was a powerful woman that stepped all the way. And, you know, that took 15 years. And it took an entire, she called them her tribe of people, taking her to the hospital and taking her for chemo once a week and helping. I mean, she owned a business, for goodness sakes, up until almost the very end. And she used the family well because we communicated well. Her employees, they communicated well. It was a big tribe to care for this woman all the way to the end.
You also mentioned the outdated role of families or outdated family roles and the need to rewrite them. What do you mean by rewriting the family roles?
Well, I do love that. How do you rewrite the family roles? Back to what we were talking about earlier, we don't see how culture kind of presses us to do things we don't realize that we do. For example, my mother, when she was first diagnosed with cancer, I lived three states away, but I made it my mission to go home every month and clean her house and make sure she had meals in her refrigerator and just hang out with her. And I ended up doing this, as I said, for many years. And this was in grad school and raising kids and being a wife. And so I started off with a really good intent. I wanted my mother to know that I loved her. I wanted her to wake up with a clean bathroom to be ill in after chemo, you know, just basic loving things. But I didn't count the cost that there were other things I could do. I didn't have to keep doing those things. So I was exhausting myself, making sure I drove home every month and spent 3 days cleaning the house from top to bottom when I could have been doing things that were better for her spirit and better for my soul.
And then, you know, counting the cost, it seems you talked about counting the cost for your mother, counting the cost for you. How did that affect your family when you're devoting that amount of time?
Well, my husband and I didn't even realize we were on the edge of emotional and financial ruin. I mean, we had been together. We were childhood sweethearts. We've been through thick and thin. We've been on mission teams together. We were best friends, but it was at the point where I didn't want to hear his problems. He didn't want to hear my problems because we were so busy taking care of other people's problems that we didn't even know how to be married well. So I had to, because part of me that can change is only me. I had to reevaluate, am I even able to take care of my husband? And do I even want to? So being a Christian woman, I'm going to be raw in this. I came from the old school. I'm a Southern Christian woman, which means you have dinner on the table when your husband gets home. Now that might rattle.
Amen.
Well, the feminist in me kind of says, why? He knows how to cook. He's got two hands, right? Why isn't he cooking for the kids? And that push me, pull you thing that's going on in my real life becomes an issue. Now I'm having a fight with my husband, right? Not fair to him or to me. So I needed to look at, you know, just some of the basic things that we do and how that affects our emotions and our spirituality and our relationships with our, when you say family, I'm going to say husband, because the two of us are the first ones in the house. And then now how are we taking care of the children and how are we taking care of both of our aging parents? becomes a unit and becomes a marriage as opposed to trying to do it all alone.
So his parents needed help as well?
They do now. Mm-hmm. They do now. So they were in a different state, a whole nother state than my mother. So there's a lot of organizing, true, but more than that, there's a lot of making sure that we're emotionally ready for each other when we do get our time together that's planned out.
Hello, everyone. Pastor Bob here. We are all out of time for today's interview with Elizabeth Adams. Now, some of you are experiencing exactly what Elizabeth has been sharing with us. Some of you know people who are sharing or who are experiencing things that Elizabeth has been sharing with us. Some of you have experienced these things in the past. Some of you are anticipating experience them in the future. The thing I want you to take from today's interview, and we're just through part one, come back tomorrow for part two as we conclude the interview with Elizabeth Adams, is you don't have to go through it alone. And to gain insight into everything that we've been talking about, you need to order her book. Her book is an awesome write, and it's available in the show notes down below. It's called Living with Mama, and she has free resources and all that. You can get that through her website. But you need to come back tomorrow to hear the conclusion of the interview, because we go into even more detail, and it's even more important. So till tomorrow, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do. Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this: your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a Faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.